You've probably heard me say many times on this program that the Colorado River is in danger. 7 western states have to find a way to use less of it, or else the federal government is going to step in and make those painful cuts for them. It sounds easy on paper. Farms and cities and individual households need to live with less so that the river keeps flowing and the dams keep making hydropower. But in reality, how to use less has been tough to figure out, especially with something as life-giving as water. KUNC's Luke Runyon has been thinking about all this in his new podcast about the Colorado River called Thirst Gap. Luke, welcome.
Hey, thanks for having me.
And let's start with some sound from your podcast. This is Eric Kuhn, co-author of the book Science Be Damned, talking about the crisis on the river.
The river is being significantly impacted by a changing climate, and also impacted by what has been decades of very big growth in the West.
So that's the problem. A hotter, drier climate, plus millions of people are moving to the Southwest, have moved to the Southwest. The question I keep coming back to is, how are we going to solve this problem? How are people going to save this river?
Well, a lot of the focus is on reducing our demand for the river's water. That's the future that we're facing. And so that's the conversation that's going on throughout the Southwest, is all of the various sectors of our economy, all of the various users throughout those 7 states, Mexico, tribes, everyone's sort of trying to figure out, how do we go about relying on this river less? And it's a really hard conversation to have because we've created a ton of demand for water. Those giant cities, sprawling agricultural regions, all take a lot of water to keep them humming. And so trying to figure out who should have to bear the burden of water scarcity in the Southwest is a really uncomfortable conversation that we're having.
It's not just use less, it's profoundly less, because I remember when a water manager in Phoenix told me that you could get rid of every swimming pool and every golf course in the city and turn off every single tap in Phoenix and Tucson and Las Vegas, you still wouldn't come even close to solving this crisis. And I wonder if you've had any moments in the 5 years that you spent covering this story where you realize just how big of a problem this is.
Yeah, this is to the point now where people are going to feel these cuts, this gap between supply and demand, and the changes that are coming are going to be profound. You know, I live in Colorado. You could zero out the entire state of Colorado's use of the Colorado River and not fill that gap between supply and demand. So really, this is going to have to come from all different sectors of our economy. You know, farmers are going to have to feel some pain of this water scarcity. Cities are going to have to change what they're doing in order for us to balance the supply and demand.
Let's spend some time on farmers then for just a minute. 80% of the river approximately goes to agriculture. They're going to have to be a part of this solution. How willing are they, in your experience talking with them?
I think it depends on where you are. You know, a lot of the West functions on this water rights system, where the further back you go in time, the more protected your water right is. And so farmers were among the first European settlers to move to the Southwest. And so their water rights are really old. They're more protected, they're more valuable. And so I think there's a temptation for some farmers to want to retreat into these very senior water rights and feel very protective about that. But I think, you know, no one is under an impression that we're going to completely dry up cities in order to keep growing alfalfa hay in the Southwest. And so I think there's a bit of pragmatic discussion that's going on in the Southwest of, how do you go about incentivizing farmers to use less? If you're not going to crack the hammer and, you know, say mandate cuts in agriculture, how do you go about bringing farmers to the table and incentivize them to use less? And we've seen a few different programs rolled out that do just that, basically pay farmers to either make efficiency upgrades on their farms or just go about using less water overall, basically paying farmers not to farm. And those programs are kind of in progress right now. And it's, you know, it remains to be seen how long we're going to be offering carrots instead of sticks when it comes to water conservation in agriculture.
You know, let's talk about that, because many farmers do not want to stop growing, you know, even if they get paid for it. What has happened in the past when farmers let their fields go unplanted?
The effects are kind of varied. So on the ground, you can imagine if you're not watering a crop, you've got a giant dirt patch. And so we've seen localized issues when it comes to dust. You know, the wind kicks up and it sprays that dust all throughout different agricultural valleys. So that's a concern. Another one is if you're paying a farmer not to farm, there are other effects in the local agricultural economy. You're paying the farmer, so maybe he or she is kept whole. But that farmer then isn't paying for fuel, isn't paying for tractor maintenance, isn't paying for seed. And there haven't really been great explanations of how you make up for that so that you don't have this sort of domino effect throughout the local ag economy.
I see a lot of finger pointing. The cities say, you can't get what you need out of us because the farms use most of the water. The farmers say, look at Phoenix and Las Vegas and Los Angeles. They're just growing and growing and growing. What about the cities? What kind of trade-offs are they up against if they lose a significant amount of the river?
When it comes to municipal use, most of the focus that I hear now is on outdoor water use. Most cities, you think of like the water that's used inside of a home for showers, for dishwashers. All of that water ends up getting treated and returned to a river or a reservoir or a stream. So there's not a net loss. The loss really comes when water is sprayed outside on grass or in a swimming pool or something like that. That's really where the loss comes, is when water evaporates. And so that's really been the focus of most large cities in the West, is how do you go about incentivizing people to use less water outdoors? And, you know, different cities have taken different tacts here. You could zoom in on Las Vegas, which has been really aggressive on incentivizing people to rip out their lawns and actually making certain types of grass illegal now and mandating its removal. And I think that Las Vegas is really a leader here. We're probably going to end up seeing more of that in big cities throughout the Southwest as scarcity gets worse and worse.
That's the ornamental grass in Las Vegas. If you only step on it to mow it, it's illegal, right?
Yeah, they call it non-functional turf, which is basically just a way of saying this is grass purely for aesthetics. It could be, you know, the grass in the middle of a roundabout or the kind of grassy facade in front of a business park or something like that.
And that grass is thirsty. All grass is thirsty. Indigenous people, they are a part of this conversation in a way that they never really have been before historically. There are 30 federally recognized tribes in the basin. Some of them have significant rights to the water. And then others like the Navajo Nation, which are up right against the river, have never gotten a drop from it. What role are their voices playing in this race to keep the river flowing?
It's an increasing role, but it's one where, you know, a lot of tribes that you talk to say that they still don't have an equal seat at the negotiating table over the river's future. Basically, tribes have significant rights to Colorado River water, but haven't been given the resources to actually use that water. And there are kind of big, unanswered, lingering questions about what it's going to take in order for those tribes to use their water rights and be made whole. And I talked with a principal hydrologist for the Navajo Nation tribal government. Her name's Crystal Tuli Cordova.
I think with the Colorado River Basin, the challenge is that many people think that things are etched in stone. And when you have that mentality of things that are etched in stone, it's like, oh, things are not able to change from the past. And it's thinking like, well, it's worked the past 100 years. It should always work.
Mm. Luke, what do you think she's trying to tell you there?
This river system, we've been attempting to manage it now for 100 years. And I think there's this sort of like perpetual motion, like we've always done it this way. We're always going to continue to do it this way. But tribes were not involved 100 years ago. And in order to make the river function for everyone, in order to make sure that the whole system is equitable, I think tribes have to be at the negotiating table in a way that they haven't been in the past.
When we started, I asked you, how are we going to do this? How will we save the river? I guess I'll end by asking you, what happens if we don't? If we can't figure out a way to use less on farms, in cities, all across the region?
I think we're going to be facing a future where cities and farmers throughout the Southwest are going to be struggling to secure their water supplies. I mean, really, this isn't, we don't really have a choice in this matter. Like, we have to go about using less water in the Southwest because there's going to be less available. And I think what, you know, I hope people take away from listening to Thirst Gap is that we have some control here. Like, we have the ability to go in and make hard decisions and figure out how we go about reducing demand because we have to. You know, water is this essential life-giving force. If we can't figure out how to rely on it less, you know, I think it's a pretty bleak future for the Southwest if we can't do that.
KUNC's Luke Runyon, the podcast is called Thirst Gap. It's how the Southwest is adapting to water shortages on the Colorado River. Luke, thank you very much for your reporting and your insights on this story. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Peter.